नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स गुड मॉर्निंग एवरीबॉडी दिस मॉर्निंग आई फर्स्ट वांट टू स्पीक फॉर सम टाइम्स एंड देन वी स्ट्रेट अवे स्टार्ट आवर meditation, beginning with the recital of for this morning. Don't turn into the recital right away. When we are ready to meditate, we turn into that. This is a very special retreat. I wish we have many retreats on this theme because it is such an important theme, important subject that we all must be quite fully aware of this subject. Because this is the truth. Not a truth, but the truth in life. There is no option. This is not optional, this is mandatory. This truth is mandatory. Nobody can evade it. We may, because of our various kinds of knowledge, perhaps we can postpone it for a short period of time through medical help, some other artificial means. Perhaps we can postpone, but eventually we meet this truth in life. And therefore, this is a subject that we must learn, and make it our very important, most essential subject. But as you see in our outline, the purpose of death awareness is not to live very gloomy, very depressed, very downcast, sad life. But to live this life really with joy and happiness. Sometimes it sounds very ironic, contradictory, because the subject is awareness of death. How can one be comfortable and full of joy, thinking of death? It is not very pleasant subject to think very often. But in the Buddha's teaching, we find references that he made, he showed us, that when we think of it, we will be full of joy and happiness. He said, Yato yato sammasati khandanam udayabhyam labhati piti pamojjam amatang tang vijanatang. I have it, its translation in English. I think it is better to get a good translation of this good Dhamma so that we will understand it clearly. Here is the translation. Fully knowing the arising and passing of the khandhas, one attains joy and delight. For those who know, this is the deathless. Let me read the meaning again. It's a very beautiful, in both in English and in Pali. Fully knowing the arising and passing of the khandhas, I'll explain what khandha is. One attains joy and delight. For those who know, this is the deathless. What is khandhas? What is deathless? Khandha is mountain. In Sinhalese language, we call mountain khandha. No change. I think those who speak Sinhalese, we know khandha, mountain. Khandata naginava, khandata yanava, khandata godavenava, like that we say in Sinhalese. We go to the mountain, we climb the mountain, we see the mountain and so forth in Sinhalese. So khandha means mountains. We have five mountains in us. Where are these five mountains? We hardly see even one. But we have five. What are they? One mountain we can see very easily. That is called form, the physical form. Why it is called mountain? What is the mountain made up of? Mountain is made up of various tiny, tiny, little rocks, pebbles, sand, earth, and so forth. So is this body, made up of various things. We call them elements, earth, water, air, and fire, primary elements. But this form, although it appears to be very big, it is made up of very tiny, perhaps invisible parts. For instance, if we analyze this body using very powerful microscopic lens, we can see this body is made up of very tiny little particles, and these particles, if we analyze further, we don't see even the particles. They all are waves, actions, like subatomic particles. This is the reality, the truth. But they are always in a state of flux, changing, moving, not staying in 1 second the same, even for 2 consecutive seconds the same. They are changing. And Buddha said, this is, if one sees this with the eye of wisdom, with our naked eyes we cannot see. When we cannot see something with our naked eyes, what we do? We get a powerful microscope. Similarly, when we cannot see things with our ordinary mind, we develop our mindfulness, gain concentration, focus that concentrated mindfulness on the part of our body. That's a very, very powerful way of seeing the body exactly as it is. We will get into that later on, because one who sees with wisdom, meaning one who sees with the eye of wisdom, which is called insight. With insight we can see this body is changing. And the body is one khanda of mountains, forms. In ordinary English we call element, aggregates. As you know in chemistry, when you learn aggregates, what aggregates means? Aggregates means something, a collection of various tiny things together called aggregates. Similarly, this body is an aggregate. This aggregate is called form, F-O-R-M, but it looks like F-O-A-M, form. One day when Buddha was near the river Ganges, he saw huge form, big form, collected on the water. And he showed to the bhikkhus and asked, bhikkhus, can you see this form? They said, yes. Can you see something inside solid in the form? They said, no. This form inside is hollow. Nothing inside, empty. So is every tiny little particle of our body, if we take individually and examine, there is nothing in it. But we don't see that way. We see the huge collection of this form, and outwardly it appears to be something big and solid. But this form is made up of very tiny little bubbles. And they are brittle, breakable, not permanent. That is what is happening to this body all the time. We will explain this in details if we have time later. Then the next aggregate is called feeling. Feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, physical, emotional, psychological, all put together and called feeling, which is compared to a bubble. Feeling is compared to a bubble. Vedana in Pali. Bubbulupama. Bubbula means bubble. It's very close to English word. Pali word bubbula, English bubble. It is raining outside. If you see a puddle on the road, and you can see bubble. Every drop of water creates a bubble, and next second, it's gone. So is the feelings. We have all kind of feelings. They all are bubbling, not remaining the same for two consecutive moments. Then, next khanda or aggregate is called perception. Perception is compared to a mirage. Marichi in Pali, marichi is mirage. Very close to English word. Marichi kupama sanya. Like a mirage, which appears to be real from a distance in hot summer day, driving on the road. You even can see the shadow of the vehicle driving before you in the mirage. I don't know whether you have seen it. I have seen it. That is the nature of perception. We perceive things not always correctly. But this perception, what we perceive, is also in a state of flux, changing all the time. Then, sankhara kadalupama. Sankhara means all conditioned things that comes into existence through causes and conditions. Anything that comes into existence through causes and condition is called sankhara. But in this particular context, sankhara means volitional formations. Whatever willingly, wittingly we do is called volitional formations. It is also sometimes called words. Words that we utter. Volitional formations. And physical activities are sankharas. So that also, they also change all the time, never remaining the same. Then, mayupamata vinyanang, consciousness is like magic. Our consciousness is like a magic. Magicians can create image in our mind, bringing various objects, putting them in a certain way to create and visual illusion, optical illusion in our mind. And we think that it is true and correct. That is our consciousness. So, this stanza says, whenever we perceive know things as they are, joy and delight arises. Take for instance feeling. When we reflect on feeling, when we see feeling as it is, does it always bring us joy and delight? No. Sometimes there is a very unpleasant feeling. It does not bring us joy. When the pleasant feeling arises, it brings joy. When pleasant feeling disappears, joy disappears. When unpleasant feeling disappears, joy arises. So the stanza says, whenever we the arising and passing away of khandas, one attains joy and delight. Feeling is one of the khandas. When one feeling arises, joy arises. When next feeling arises, pain arises. When one feeling disappears, pain arises. When one feeling disappears, joy arises. So, you can see, it is not consistent. then how can we know the truth of this statement? Truth of this statement, friends, comes only when we are really mindfully pay attention to the feeling. Because both feelings are equal. Both are impermanent. When the mind establishes in impermanence, then there is no way to go. We are stuck. We are in it. We cannot do anything about it. And then our mind settles down. We accept it and learn to go along with it. And that is how delight arises, knowing the truth, seeing the truth, joy arises. Not seeing the partial truth, but seeing the total truth, joy arises. Friends, death is a total truth, not a partial truth. And therefore, one of the purposes of practicing or becoming mindful of death is seeing the truth. By seeing the truth, we naturally, gradually learn to accept it. Accept it. There's no way to reject it. So, you know, when somebody is peaceful, when somebody is mindful, and remain mindful all the time, death is not something strange. Because one sees that happening all the time. And therefore, one goes along with it and be with it, accept it. Then we contemplate on death, be mindful of death to overcome the fear of death. This is one of the fears that many, many, many people, almost everybody has. Fear of death. You know, when we, every day, we see the reality through experience. When we see the reality through experience, every day, the mind conditions itself to establish in this truth. Mind establishes in the truth. Mind is not trying to reject the truth, accepts it. That acceptance of the truth will help us to overcome the fear of death. Once we accept it, it will no longer be a source of fear. Then we want to die peacefully. One of the things since we know death is a reality, one of the things we should do is practice mindfulness with metta, with loving friendliness. One of the results of practicing loving friendliness is dying peacefully without confused state of mind, clear state of mind. One would die. And Buddha said, asammulo kalankaroti. Without any confusion, without any disappointment, peacefully one would pass away. Then, we, in order to live a relaxed state of mind, we practice this, accepting the reality. You know, the Buddha, we take the Buddha as an example, he saw four things before he left home. And these four things was the last things that precipitated his leaving, accelerated his leaving home. What are the four? He first saw an old person. He reflected, this is the truth of life. This reflection did not come to him all of a sudden from the blue, from nothing. This reflection came to him from his previous experience, previous training, previous conditioning. It is said in one of his previous lives, he was a king called Makadeva. Makadeva. He has told his barber, who came to shave his head and shave his beard, not head, shave his beard every day, and occasionally trim his hair. He asked the barber, "Whenever you saw one gray hair on my head, you let me know." So this man, the same barber, went to shave his beard and cut his hair every day for many, many years. And one day he saw a gray hair on the head of this king. Now, he was afraid to tell the king because he did not know what he was going to do. Because when you saw a gray hair, you will be alarmed. And it is not a good sign. Therefore, this barber was a little hesitant to tell, but he stepped back, knelt down, folding his palms, and said, "Your Majesty, today I saw a gray hair, one." Then king said, "Pull it out, pull it out, pull it out." He was so afraid to pull out a hair from the king's head. Even by pulling one hair from his head can cause his death. Can cause his life. Then again, "Your Majesty, are you sure?" "Yes, sure, pull it out." Three times he begged him his permission to pull it out. He pulled out and put it on his palm. And then this king said, "Go and tell my viceroy, my son, and the ministers to call a meeting." Because he had one hair, gray hair. But the barber did what he asked him to. When they all assembled, king said, "I got a message. Divine messenger came. I got a message from a divine messenger." They all thought the king was going crazy. All of a sudden, he got a divine messenger. "Then why did he call us?" He said, "I got a message from a divine messenger, and here is the message." He showed the hair. "This is the message. No longer do I want to live as a king. You take over my position. He appointed his son as a king, and this king renounced the world, went to the forest, and took up mendicant life, ascetic life, and meditated for the rest of his life. Why? Because this is the truth in life. I will die one day. This is the messenger. The messenger came to me to tell me the truth. I have always ignored this truth. Today I saw it. That day he saw it. So Siddhartha Gautama, as he has practiced perfections for many, many eons in his previous lives, previous existences, had this intuitive vision in his mind. He saw, as soon as he saw an old person, he saw, this is the truth. And he then returned home. Next day when he visited the city, he should have saw a sick man. How many times we have seen sick people? It never occurred to us that we will be sick. Sickness is over there. They get sick. I am healthy. I never get sick. That is the thought that comes to our mind. But Siddhartha, as soon as he saw, he was healthy, young, 29-year-old man, in his prime youth, full of health and strength, seeing this sick person, he thought, this is what will happen to me. I must do something about it. He returned home. Next day he went out and saw a dead body and said, this is it. This is it. This is the last straw. This is what will happen to me. Although I am young, strong, healthy, powerful, enjoying the luxurious life in a palace, this will happen to me. All the wealth we leave behind. Relatives will follow up to the grave. And after that, we are all alone by ourselves. Then he saw next day a mendicant and he thought, this is the kind of life I want to live, and I want to go in search of truth that brings me beyond this death. So he strived, renounced, went on practicing self-mortification as a regular practice like everybody else. When he was in his highest point of self-mortification, he fainted and he was almost on the verge of death. Then the Mara, death, came to him and said, now you are finished. Mara was happy that he was going to die, but he did not die. When he was going to attain enlightenment, 2000 almost 600 years ago, sitting under the Bodhi tree, again Mara came, messengers of death, that's called Mara's army, came and tried to attack him, to kill him, because the defilements was coming up so strong that it was just like going to die. This is called army of Mara. Threatened him and he defeated them. Then Mara appeared once and said, now you have attained enlightenment. Why do you want to live anymore? You worked so hard just to gain this. Having gained this, why do you want to live? Pass away, please. Then Buddha said, I will not pass away. This is the wonderful thing. Once a person attained that level of vision, wisdom, enlightenment, purity, dignity, can command. He said, I am not going to die. I am not going to obey you until I establish good community of bhikkhus who have knowledge of Dhamma and Vinaya, live according to Dhamma and Vinaya, learn Dhamma and Vinaya, master Dhamma and Vinaya, be able to teach Dhamma and Vinaya perfectly, clearly, well. Until such time I will not pass away. When the bhikkhu order was established, Mara appeared again and said, now you have done your duty, why don't you pass away? He said, no. Until I establish bhikkhunis order, who are able, learned, wise, intelligent, can teach the Dhamma, learn the Dhamma, live according to Dhamma, spread the Dhamma, until their order is well established, I'm not going to pass away. Then death Mara appeared again and said, now you have established bhikkhu's order, bhikkhuni's order, why don't you pass away? He said, until men, followers of my Dhamma, are well established, well studied, well known the Dhamma, and practice Dhamma, and until they are well established, I am not going to pass away. Then the Mara appeared again, fourth time, and said, why don't you pass away now? He said, no, until all women, followers, learn the Dhamma, practice Dhamma, attain status of liberation, I will not pass away. When all the four communities were well established, Mara appeared again and asked him to pass away. Then he said, well, that is true. It is time for me to go. And he said, he gave him 3 months' notice. Who can give 3 months' notice to death? Buddha did that. He gave 3 months' notice and gave exact moment of his death. He said, on such and such a day, at such and such a time, at such and such a place, in such and such a position, I will pass away. He had this power. Where did he get this power? Through knowing the truth. He established his mind in this truth, truth of impermanence. He knew exactly when to die, how to die. Exactly on that particular day, at that particular time, on full moon day, he won't, you know, nobody expected a person like him to pass away in an unknown remote village called Kushinara. There were many cities, many kings, many ministers, rich people all around him who were ready to do anything for him. But he walked to that particular place. He wanted to show the world that if you know the death, impermanence perfectly well, you can walk with death in hand, knowing I am going to die at such and such a place, in such and such a way, at such and such a time. He did that, and exactly the same way, he did not die with confusion. He died with peace, clarity, purity, honor, dignity. Attain jhanas, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth jhanas, mindfully, and came down to first one, mindfully, and went to the fourth jhana, and then mindfully he passed away. When somebody passes away mindfully, friends, that is the best way to die. The best way to die. So, he was able to do that because he was practicing this very same death, mindfulness of death. He knew it perfectly well. From his own experience, he never said anything to us out of blue without any experience. He knew perfectly well. That's why last night I said we take refuge in the Buddha to instill the faith in us, to follow that same footsteps, that same path, and never have any fear of death. So, what is the definition of mindfulness of death? There's a definition of death in medical terms, medical terms. It is brainstem criterion. When the brainstem dies, that is medically accepted criterion of death, definition of death. Heart criterion is not so sure, because you can pump the blood through artificial means while the brain is still working. So, medically, we are not going to talk about medical definitions of death. But we are talking about a mindfulness, definition of mindfulness of death, mindfulness of death. In Pali it is called Marana Anusati, Marana Sati. Maranasa Sati, Marana Sati. Maranasa Sati means mindfulness of death. Sati is remembering. Sati, Sampajana, Sato, Sampajano are used for one. Sati is remembering, Sampajano is knowing. Passing away with Sati Sampajanya, knowing, remembering death. In other words, knowing the, remembering that we die, we know when we are, when we die. That means we die knowingly, not unknowingly. That means every second, every moment of our death is very clear to us. We pay even at the moment of death, we pay total attention to every tiny little passing moment until we pass last moment. So, meaning every moment we see death. And that is not anything different that takes place when we really have a conventional death. The knowing, the every moment of death is called momentary death. That means we are dying every moment. Every moment we die, we are not aware of it. We are not aware of it. You know, all of a sudden having a gray hair, I don't have one to show you, but well, I shaved. Otherwise, every hair on my head, most of them, were gray. So, this hair turning gray has not happened or did not happen today or yesterday or day before yesterday or 3, 4, 5, a week before it happened. This turning of gray hair, or gray hair turning gray, began at the moment of conception in our mother's womb. We never knew that. And it went on happening that changing it so slowly, so consistently, it never failed. It started with the, if there is an intention, it started with the intention, one day I will turn gray. It did not have that kind of intention, but that potential, that probability has already implanted at the moment of concept in our mother's womb. And that one day manifested outwardly. Only then we know hair is grey. It has been happening. Similarly, everything in our body is changing the same way all the time, without any exception. Where is the escape of death? Since it is happening all the time, we are not aware of it. But become aware of it would be a real joy to see what really is happening. When we are aware of it, we are with it. It will not give us a surprise. Now we see, when we see gray hair all of a sudden, we will be shocked. when my eyesight is not clear, look in the mirror, I look very young. When my eyesight is clear, with the bright light I look in the mirror very closely, I see I'm not that young. I want to pretend to be young because of my wish is that. I always try to sweep the truth under the rug. If I am mindful, I don't have to do that. I go along with it, accepting it, being comfortable with it, and going along with whatever is happening to me. That gives us sense of relaxation. We relax. So, we accept the momentary death. Every moment, every second, we die. Every cell, this cell must die for new cell to arise. Right? If cell don't die, new cell will not be born. Old cell must die. This is called Khanika Marana. Then there is another death called conventional death. Conventional death is the death that we all know, Sammuti Marana, that we all know when Ayu, Usma, Vijnana, lifespan, body heat, and consciousness leave the body, we are dead. And the third type of marana, death, is called paramattha marana, that is eternal death. Eternal death, actually, this entire process is eternal. This changing, impermanence is eternal. Whether the Buddhas come into existence or not, this truth existed. Impermanence exists all the time. Buddha did not invent it. Nobody invented it. It has always been there. Things are changing all the time. Then what is the eternal death? Eternal death is stopping this eternal, permanent permanently impermanent occurrence, we stop. Death, the changing is permanent. Impermanency permanent. In other words, things are permanently impermanent. We stop this permanently impermanent process by attaining full liberation. That is called eternal death. When the Buddha faced, we can say, although Buddha left home seeking deathlessness, he still had to die. When he passed away, he left this impermanent body, impermanent feeling, impermanent perception, impermanent thought. He left all these impermanent things behind to become permanently deathless. That is what he was seeking. Until we reach that level, that state, death occurs to us. So, we must accept that. That is our definition of mindfulness of death. That is three types of death. One is momentary death. Other is conventional death, which is called sammuti marana. And the third is called eternal death or paramatta marana. Dying never to have death again. Conventional death, we die to die again. Because when we die, that is not the end of our life. That is the beginning of another life. So, every time we die, leaving the cause of death behind. What is the cause of death? Pathologist will find the cause of death. The brain damage or this food poison or this and that. Buddha gave one cause of death. What is the cause of death? Cause of death is birth. If you don't take birth, who is there anybody to die? No. Since we are born, we die. So, this is the real definition of mindfulness of death. And we also must remember, this is very important to remember, that we consume time and time consumes us. Every moment we live, we eat time, use time. At the same time, time uses us. Time consumes us, we consume the time. That is what is happening in our life. And in your outline you can see, for us to reflect, remember, the five messengers, what are they? Birth, aging, sickness, and the punishment and death. Then there are five reflections. I have not mentioned the five reflections. The five reflections are not exactly the same. One is that both ordained and non-ordained, or men, women, and monks and nuns, all of us, without any exception, should daily reflect, remember that we all are subject to old age. We are growing every moment. That we have to reflect mindfully, without fear, accepting every single change in our every single day. Today, we are not the same as yesterday. So we accept what is today as we are. Tomorrow we will not be exactly as today. So tomorrow we accept ourselves exactly as we will be. Month later, we will not be the same as today. Then month later, we accept us exactly as we will be month later. So this is the reflection of old age, growing old. Second is that we all are subject to sickness. Not that we should not take medicine when we are sick. While taking medicine, trying to get cure, get better, get well, we must reflect. Instead of getting depressed, when we are sick, people generally become very depressed. Instead of emotionally reacting to sickness, we understand that this is one of the truth and facts of life. We fall sick. So we take care of it. And then, third is separation from loved ones. Separation from loved ones is a very natural truth. And of course, the cause of suffering, pain. But at the same time, we must understand all union ends in separation. All of us don't have any security, any assurance that we can live together all the time. There's nothing. We always must reflect that we will be separating from our loved ones, no matter how close we are. That we have to keep in. Not that we should not love one another. We have total love, total affection with one another as we practice metta. At the same time, at the back of our mind, we always must keep the fact that we will separate one day, either by death or by physical separation. And that consoles us to accept the truth. Fourth is death. Of course, as I mentioned, all our relatives, friends and all, we leave behind and we go alone. People are afraid. Some people said, I don't mind dying, but being alone underground, 6 feet underground by myself, I'm afraid of that. I don't mind dying by being in a box, small box, called coffin, alone by myself. I don't like that. So some people have this kind of very silly fear of death, not knowing what death is. And the fifth daily reflection is that this is also very important. Is to reflect that whatever I do, good or bad, wholesome or unwholesome, is mine, not yours. It doesn't belong to my relative, friends, parents, children, brothers, sisters, country, nation, the government. My good and bad things belong to myself, not to anybody else. And that is all I take with me. The reason for reflecting on all these four or five, one, when we reflect on old age, normally when we are young, we are very proud of our youth. We never think of old people. Many young people have very insensitive attitude towards old people. They want to get rid of them as quickly as possible. Make them quickly senior citizens to put them somewhere so that they will enjoy their young, healthy life. To get rid of this pride of youth, we mindfully reflect every day on old age, that I will be old one day. Second, to overcome pride of good health. When we think of that we will get sick, we will not be very proud of our good health. Third is to overcome the pride of longevity. Those who live maybe one century, some people can live one century. I know several people who have lived a century or more than a century. They are in a good health, never been to hospital until they die. Such people can be very proud of their long life. So-and-so died 10 years younger than me, 20 years younger than me. I am still living and so forth. They can be very proud of their longevity. And the fourth is to overcome attachment to loved ones. That is reflecting on separation from loved ones. Will overcome that pride. And then lastly, you see, to avoid the, there's a typo, please correct it, committing, typing is coming. It should be corrected as committing. Committing evil thoughts, words, and deeds. And committing wholesome thoughts, words, and deeds. When we think of our karma that we take with us, then we commit wholesome thoughts, words, and deeds and avoid unwholesome thoughts, words, and deeds. So, friends, that's all time I have for this morning. Now we can... I don't think we need too much a break, but perhaps since you have been sitting this long, you may stand up and stretch yourself, don't go away, and have a little meditation. Thank you.